It's hard to believe, but in the future, I could be dining out on the grass in this paddock, because New Zealand scientists are well on the way to creating very nutritious human food from pasture. It certainly gives a new meaning to the term paddock to plate. But any new plant protein industry does depend on farmers being incentivized to lock up some of their land for things like grass burgers. So the agribusiness firm Baker Ag is looking into this with funding from the research agency Our Land and Water. And I've come to find out more from one of their consultants.
I'm Sarah Hawkins, and we're standing here today in the middle of a paddock on Stolk Dairy Farm, located just south of Marston in the Wairarapa. Beautiful sunny day. We had a good frost this morning, but it looks like it's going to clear out and become a stunner.
They have eaten down this paddock by the look of things.
Yeah, so they've just finished grazing off their break for this morning, and they're going to head into the feed barn in probably about 15-20 minutes and get their supplement for the day before they head back to a paddock until this afternoon's milking.
Now, this study that you're doing is all about grass. It's about pasture.
It is.
Tell us about the concept of grass burgers.
Basically, Plant and Food, Fonterra and Palmer have come up with this technology where they're able to extract human edible proteins out of pasture, so what cows eat. So they're able to extract that protein out, which is going to become a food additive moving forward. What us as Baker Ag are doing, we're doing, how does this work on a dairy farm? How can it fit in to a dairy farm as part of their systems without causing too many disruptions, but also adding to the system and hopefully improving the environmental outcomes of that dairy farm?
Can I leap in there and ask you just a little bit more about the idea of eating grass? Because it's such a radical idea, isn't it?
It is. It's. I haven't tried any of the products yet, to be fair. I still think of, you know, we've got the perfect animals out there that are that converter. You know, they take grass and they turn it into edible proteins. But going forward, they do have an environmental implication. They create greenhouse gas emissions. You know, there is an issue with nitrates in the waterways. So what we're doing is looking at alternative ways to get human digestible food while also maintaining the viability of dairy farms and potentially in the future sheep and beef farms.
The idea is to take the cow out of the equation with this so that the protein in the grass goes directly to the human.
Yes, that's correct. So what we do, we remove the cows from the paddock effectively. Instead of cows eating it, we bring a tractor in and harvest it like you would for silage. Instead of making silage out of it, it goes to a big processing factory. They do whatever magic they do, and out the bottom comes a human digestible protein, which can be turned into a food additive, maybe added to, you know, the no dairy cheese or into a protein powder.
A patty?
A patty, probably. what remains out of what's extracted, so the fibrous stuff, that can actually be imported back onto the dairy farm as a food supplement for the cows on the dairy farm. So it's quite a full cycle. There's nothing getting wasted.
So let's go into the whys around this. What is the reasoning behind taking some of this pasture away from the cow to ruminate on?
Well, I mean, there's a number of factors for that. First one is there's increasing demand for non-animal high-quality food, so this is hoping to meet part of that market, which is obviously why the research has been done. But it has the added benefit of if there's less cows on farm, there's going to be less of that environmental implications from either the methane emissions, but also those urine depositions and effluent, which not always, but if poorly managed, can have an adverse environmental effect, which if you consider high-density dairy farming areas like the Canterbury Plains, like areas in Southland, areas in the Hawke's Bay, you know, collectively, on-farm it might only be small, but collectively it can be a bigger problem. And so there are regional councils in those areas have already indicated that there is going to be drastic change in some of these catchments moving forward within the next generation or two. So by doing this research, we're hoping to highlight opportunities for dairy farmers so that they can still have the cows, still have the dairy farm, still remain financially viable while also reducing their environmental footprint.
So basically fewer cows producing less greenhouse gases and also the nitrates.
Yeah. So with our land and water, because it's the water focus, the focus is on the nitrates as opposed to the methane. The methane is a happy side effect.
So that would mean the farmer locking away more of his or her pasture for this particular purpose? Because already they would do that for silage,
yes,
wouldn't they?
So normally what happens is you've got a pasture demand curve and a pasture supply curve based on what grows and what needs to be eaten by your dairy cows. They never match exactly, and so what you'll do is anytime you've got a surplus of feed, you'd lock it up and cut it for silage or baleage, and then you'd feed it out when you don't have enough feed growing. Instead of that, what we're doing is we are reducing the stocking rate, so there's less cows, so that supply and demand, there is a lot more supply than demand, so we lock up a greater proportion of that farm, and that instead some of it will still get turned to silage for the cows maybe, but most of it will go to that factory to get that human degradable protein taken out of it.
Baker Ag's going to be using farms in Southland, Canterbury and Hawke's Bay as case studies. The farmers involved are open to alternatives, especially as they face drastically reducing their nitrate emissions to clean up waterways.
You know, some of them are facing restrictions of 90%. You know, I think the farm down in Matara, he said that they've been told they want a 90% reduction in nitrate emissions within the next generation. So without an alternate source of income, that farm is now not financially viable. So we're hoping that this is going to prove that there are other options for these farmers. They can continue milking some of the cows, provide that really good quality milk that they continue doing, but also provide these other proteins that can be turned into human digestible feed.
There is a catch, though. These grass burgers, I'm going to keep calling them that because it does conjure up quite an interesting image. They'll need to fetch the right price for farmers to be interested. And as the cows make their way to the barn to get their feed, I put that to Sarah Hawkins.
It looks like the protein price needs to be linked to that milk price, because if a farmer is saying that they could get $9.50 per kilo milk solid, but they're only going to get the equivalent of, say, $5 per kilo protein, they're not, you know, that's a $4.50 difference. So it kind of needs to be linked to that milk price, unless there is some significant benefits from the environmental side of it, which is also why we're targeting these environmental catchments, to see what additional benefit, whether it's financial or not, is this going to bring to a farm environmentally.
There are other plant proteins out there that farmers could go into,
yep.
Say soy or
peas, almond trees. The benefit of using the grass is it's already there, so it's not going to have the additional cost of establishing a new grass or establishing a new cross, and the cost that actually has on the environment. A lot of people aren't aware that, you know, every time you cultivate a paddock, you're releasing nitrogen, and that has its own environmental implications. Whereas if you've got a permanent pasture, it's already established, it's already healthy, and so there's no extra work for the farmer. It's already part of the system, as opposed to having to go out and learn a whole new skill around cropping and the additional, the education that would be required. And often those aren't suitable crops to be grown in New Zealand climates, or we can't do them cost-effectively. You know, America and Australia have these huge, huge farms with economies of scale. New Zealand farms don't have that. We're quite little comparatively. We do what we do really well, but we don't have those economies of scale to produce, you know, the large-scale soybean or peas that could bring that cost down of that protein. So I suppose the benefit of why it's grass is it's already on farm, it's part of a system, the farmers already know it, there's no drastic change to the system for them, so they're going to be more open to it for the most part.
And on the average-sized dairy farm, how much pasture at this stage do you think would be worth a farmer locking up?
We're still probably going to initially look at that 10, 15, 20%. Because beyond that, the farmer will start losing economies of scale. They might have to drop a stock, a staff unit, that sort of thing. We don't want to drastically change the farm system at this point. But going forward, that might be something that we look into. But for the purpose of the study, it's just likely to be that 10 to 20% of the farm system that would take out.
And would a farmer need to make more investments, more technology to actually process this stuff, or would it be sent to a centralised area?
So the idea is that it'll be sent to a centralised area. So basically the way we're working it and the way we're modelling it and our understanding of it is that basically the farm shrinks his area. The land that is for the pasture protein is effectively not leased out, but they'll do the nitrogen applications, but the harvest company, the processing company, they'll come in and they'll do the cutting of and, the harvesting of that grass and take it to their centralised location to process it so that they can harvest it at the optimum time for them. If a farmer was required to do that, it would get a bit harder because he's going to have to do that around his day-to-day business. And so the pasture might not be cut at the optimum time, that sort of thing. So that's why we've in our modelling, it gets outsourced to the processor.
And just finally, Sarah, let's just talk about this in a global sense. How good is New Zealand pasture in terms of protein?
So good. The only other comparable country is probably Ireland. We've got quite similar climates. We've got that maritime temperate sort of climate. And so we grow really good quality ryegrass. You know, it's 12 ME, so megajoules of metabolizable energy. Whereas, you know, you go to somewhere like Canada or America, not so sure about Europe, I haven't really looked into it, but they can grow a lot of feed for a very short period of time, and then it's just too cold or too hot, depending on which side of the country. And so they can't have the grass-based system that we have, because their feed system, their plant growth systems just don't work the same way. So we're extremely lucky in New Zealand with our climate and what we can grow and how we can feed our animals.
And possibly our humans.
And possibly our humans going forward, which is pretty exciting.
Sarah Hawkins of the agribusiness consultancy Baker Ag. And she says nitrogen would still need to be applied to the pasture intended for human consumption. But without the urine patches from cows in the mix, it's expected there would be less wastage and leaching of nitrogen.